Hello, everyone. My name is Alex Bridges, ABDL author, and I have Miss Lizzie James on the line, and we're going to talk a little bit about her creative process and plans for the future. Lizzie is an actress, pro-dom, professional mommy, and fantasy facilitator. Before we jump into this, Lizzie, where can people find your work?
Hi, people can find me on Twitter at @BabyLizzieJames, or they can visit my website at MissLizzieJames.com, and it has all my information there about sessions, virtual sessions, and also my clip stores.
So thank you again for making time for me today. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
Absolutely. Can we start with you tell me about some of the different genres and fetishes that you do?
Sure. I do. My main focus is ABDL and spanking. I'm a switch in my personal play and also in doing pro services. So a lot of the times I play the babysitter role, the mommy dom role, the diaper girlfriend. I've done that before. I also work on another, avenues of getting into like the foot fetish, tickling, that kind of stuff. But ABDL, diapers, and spanking are at the heart of like what I love to do and what I excel at.
Be still my heart. So, why those? How did you come across those?
Well, I mean, like many people probably, like I'm a true ABDL. It's been something where, I've always had these urges and I've always had these desires, but I didn't really understand it or know what it was until my mid-20s. When I finally realized that something wasn't working with my vanilla life and I started Googling. And of course, Google leads down a road of, oh, wow, there's people like me. There's people, who have the same things. And I got into it. And then, it's kind of evolved that, I got into the interest in it. I started making content. And here I am almost 4 years later.
So I'm kind of curious because it's always, it interests me when people kind of find this out about themselves, or if not finding out about themselves, they sort of don't really act on it until, their mid or late 20s. That's very different from people who, it's been like a forever thing, and get into it, when they're like 20, as opposed to, 29. So what was that kind of like coming into the scene? Just that first approach to it.
Well, it was, I kind of had a very rare approach to it. I call it baptism by fire. I had repressed a lot of stuff for a long time. And then I had had a friend who had overdosed, and I had realized, life's short and, I don't want to go to my own demise and think of what could have been or what I missed out on. So I started Googling, I started reaching out. And then I realized that, people, it wasn't just, what I've seen before, like, people who are just 24/7 goo goo gaga all the time. There's people who look like me, look like my friends, look like boyfriends and girlfriends. That are into the same stuff. And then I discovered FetLife. And I really, the main thing for me is I discovered ABDL porn. And it was the first time I saw women and men who were my age, who look like me, who look like people I would approach, doing the things I always fantasized to do, that I always had these urges, but I thought I was broken. And I realized, oh, hey, I'm not the only one doing this. And so it just stumbled my first interaction. I ended up making content and I started taking pictures just to feel good about myself. I used to wear my screen name was the Witty Ginger. And when I came onto the scene, I wore a horrible blonde wig for the first 3 months. And I started taking pictures just on Tumblr and Twitter just to get comfortable with myself. And then I finally took the wig off. And then I realized, making this content was making me feel better. And then eventually I started seeing these videos. And I'm like, you know what? I can do that. And I've always liked kind of doing the acting stuff. And then I realized that, the porn and the content, even though it sounds corny, I know people get their rocks off to it, it helped me feel less alone and less of a freak. And so I decided to make content so people can see somebody who looks like them, somebody who they looks like they would know them, somebody doing the fetish and desires that they want to do to make them feel less alone. Because that's the thing, I feel like when you have somebody who looks like you or looks like somebody you know in real life, it makes that you can internalize it so there's less shame. It just helps seeing somebody that looks like you in adult content.
Mm-hmm. So, that's kind of, I guess, how long kind of passed between you realizing this content was out there and you making your own?
I moved pretty fast, I'm not going to lie. I wore my first adult diaper in June 2017. 2017. And I made my first video. I started taking pictures in August, September of that year. And then I started filming. I made my first video in November with another studio. And then in 2018, that summer, I had went to my first ABDL. I went to CapCon. I went to a few spanking parties. And I realized, you know what, I'm going to do this. And I opened my own clip store. And from there, I went full throttle, because when I started making my own content, I realized I can control what I put out. I'm not depending on other producers. And as an ABDL myself, I know what people want. And I'd rather make the content that I would want to see, because I know there's a lot of people out there who want to see the same things.
That is, you know, that's kind of just a really impressive story, because that's really brave. I think going, making your own content, period, any kind of content, and putting it out there for folks, I think that's just something that's pretty brave, because people are opening themselves up to criticism.
Thank you.
And you know, doing video content, especially because you know you're really putting yourself out there, is a big leap.
Yeah, I mean, it was, sometimes I look back and I go, oh my God, like, and still even sometimes I'm kind of like, holy crap, what did I do? But I did this again. I was in my late 20s. I had had my vanilla career solidified. I knew that I wasn't going to be anywhere in the public. And I knew I would not, I advise anybody who is younger, in their early 20s, do not do this. You know, wait until you have your career on track, and you really do not do this just for the money, because it's not just about the money at all. And, you know, it was really when I'm doing something, and I think I had waited for so, so long to let this part out of it. And it just kind of came out full throttle. And, you know, whenever, and I, in my vanilla career, I do have a background in digital media. So I was, you know, comfortable with the camera, with editing, with photos, and it was just a really good outlet for me. So it definitely is, people are like, wow, you've done a lot in the 3.5 years. It'll be 4 years in July, but it was, you know, you've done a lot. And I look back, I'm like, yeah, but you know, I think about all the time, even though sometimes I have regrets that I waited so long to get into this, I feel like it was the perfect time in my life, because I joke, I had enough therapy under my belt to withstand the criticism. Mm-hmm. And I had a better sense of self, that I knew if somebody tried to bring me down, or which they have, you know, people have tried to get into my head and that kind of stuff, I'm able to shut it down and be like, nope, you can go away now.
That's kind of the attitude you have to have.
Yeah.
When you think about that first piece of content you created, just from your own perspective, you look back on it now, what's your opinion of it?
I had to laugh, because I actually watched some of my early spanking clips, my ABDL clips, a couple nights ago. And I see, I cringe, because that wig, oh my God, like, why did I wear that wig for the first 3 months? But I see somebody, and I can see the excitement in my eyes. I can see, you know, everything was new and that kind of stuff. And I know I'm still grateful for that, you know, the version of myself that just jumped in there, because if I did think about it, I don't think I would have done it. My life would look a lot different right now, but it's definitely, I'm at the point where enough time has passed that I've become nostalgic, and it's cool, because literally since I've come onto the scene, I've been public. So I've been able, it's almost like a scrapbook. And a lot of the people who follow me, they've said that they love watching the journey, that I was just this girl posting pictures of the wig on my kitchen floor, to now having over 200 clips, working with producers, and, you know, creating all this content. And they've loved seeing the growth over, you know, the short amount of time, which really means a lot, because again, like, I do know people get their rocks off of this, but I do like having meaningful connections in the ABDL and spanking community, and with people who I interact with.
Mm-hmm. You know, there are two separate communities there, and my own fetishes personally, and in my writing, it's both. I do mostly ABDL content, but
That's how I found you, actually, because you do a terrific blend of both, and I like both. I'm like, oh, this is good.
Yeah, and for me, the temptation is always, if I'm trying to write something that is just spanking content, I have such a hard time not bringing age play into it, because for me, they just go together.
Yeah, exactly.
What's that like for you, trying to keep those separate when you need to keep them separate?
Well, for me, it was actually my first really intro into kink, and a lot of my friends from it, I got into the spanking world. They were the ones who first really welcomed me with open arms. I was lucky that a lot of them are into age play and in ABTL, not all of them, you know, into diapers, but there's a good number of them. And I was able to explore it that way. But when I have it separated, it's more when I don't do the spanking. It's more of the nice, soft mommy dommy, you know, like, oh, come here, sweetheart. You know, the nice, like, diaper change, the cuddling, that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. which I do for a lot of sessions. when I'm also, when I'm being a little itchy, you know, when I'm really in the little headspace, I don't like spanking. I like spanking to kind of get me in a headspace. But when I'm feeling super little, I will run from a spanking because I just rather color and suck my thumb. So having it that way, and I feel like, you know the tone, whoever you're playing with. That's why it's so important that, you know, you have the conversations and you have that, you establish that communication before you start a session. So, you know, okay, like, well, you have to be able to read the person, like, are they pushing for the spanking, or can you just tell they just want to be, you know, nurtured and cuddled?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you say that from your own perspective. When you're feeling little, it's just not something you want. And I think this kind of goes along with regression. I mean, not everybody regresses. Not everybody regresses the same way, but just that mindset of no, please don't do it. It's adorable for one thing. And it's just amusing because you see that you sort of do take on this different mindset when you sink into that persona. I think it's really interesting also that you do both big and little content.
And that's the thing I realized, you know, for when I first came onto the scene, you know, I was just a little and that kind of stuff. But, you know, and people had told me who were in this longer that you will evolve and you will find different interests. And again, like, I have evolved. There's been people where I know, you know, in my personal life, I'm primarily a sub or a little. You know, it's very rare that I actually do topping in my personal play. But when I do have friends that I know need, like, you know, the supervision or that, you know, the tenderness, I love being able to provide that. And then when I started doing the content, I realized, you know, I know the great thing about being a switch is I know what I need to know, what kind of gets me going when I'm in little space. So I know how to produce it so people can get what they want. A lot of people, the only chance they have to hear this is through a clip with content. And if I can have somebody to have a reassuring voice or somebody to a way for somebody to experience that, you know, I feel like that's a win-win all around.
And I think that's something that is missing in some ABDL content out there. I think that from my own perspective, it seems to me that age play has become a lot more common, and people are more age play aware in the King space than they were even just like 3 years ago.
Oh yeah.
So like you get onto like Clips for Sale and you see all kinds of people creating age play content or diaper content, and it's not what they do. And it's so clear that they just don't get it.
It's the worst thing ever when you see somebody who is not into, you know, age play or ABDL and you see them trying to do it, it like cringes. And I tell everybody, there was somebody, producer that I work with, who doesn't do ABDL, he does a different genre, but he wanted to do an ABDL clip. And I said, you just can't get anybody in there with a diaper. I mean, they're going to know. People in this community are so, they know who's an authentic ABDL and who isn't. They can tell when somebody's into this. And even the details, like I've gotten emails when I've done like diaper changes or whatever. They're like, Miss Lizzie, you forgot to use the powder. You know, you didn't use the powder. You didn't wipe. And I'm like, oh my God, but that's attention to detail. That's what is a differentiator between somebody who is actually living this and producing this or somebody who's just doing this for a quick buck.
Yeah. And it kind of just goes with the depth with which people understand it. excuse me. So sometimes you see, for instance, people will just sort of take their own fetish and just stick a diaper into it. And if that's your thing, more power to you. But when it's a pro doing it, it's so obvious that they just don't understand it. Or they try to do age play and it's really just more of a dom yelling at someone in a diaper.
Exactly.
Which is usually very poorly put on and is often really a pull-up. Pull-ups are diapers when you're teasing someone for being in pull-ups. The rest of the time, they are not diapers. They don't count.
I will die on that mountain. I believe that too. I mean, it's a whole different headspace. It's a whole different experience, but a pull-up is not a diaper. I will die on that mountain.
Mm-hmm. Unless it's really cute. Mm-hmm. So you also do the in-person stuff, which is another leap to go from doing video content to then doing in-person sessions with folks.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, you know, I was thinking about it, you know, I've really been debating that, especially during COVID too. You know, I had a lot of time to think and, you know, I was in isolation like many other people and I had a lot of time in my mind to think and that kind of stuff. And what would be the next level? You know, I was doing content, but like, what was going to be my next point from here? And I decided in the spring that I was going to start opening sessions. So I turned my master bedroom into the playroom and I moved myself into my second bedroom. And then in the middle of April, I got laid off from my vanilla job. which actually ended up being a blessing in disguise because I hated it. But I was like, okay, it's time to go full throttle. I mean, because sometimes you just have to be pushed into it. So I'm lucky that I have a lot of a great support system of pros, you know, in the community that were able to give me lessons on screening, on, you know, kind of setting yourself up for success, doing it the right way. And so I was able to kind of set myself up in a good way. I had a good foundation and I started doing it and people started, you know, coming. Yeah, I was surprised. If you build it, they will come. I built my website and my form 2 days after I lost my job. And then the next week I had my first 3 in-person sessions.
I think there is a tremendous pent-up demand for ABDL in-person sessions everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Can I ask what city you're in?
I'm in Bucks County. I'm in the suburbs of Philadelphia. So I'm about halfway between Center City, Philadelphia and New York City.
Yeah. And, you know, any city you can usually find a professional dominatrix, some of whom will do age play in ABDL. Some do it better than others. So, but when it comes to finding someone who is a pro mommy, that is a lot harder to do sometimes. If you're in New York, Philadelphia, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Chicago, even in those big cities, you're talking about, you know, fewer than 10 people who do it.
Exactly.
So there's a huge pent up demand. And even if you're in a mid-sized city, there might be no one.
And that's the thing. And there's a difference between somebody who's actually that offers it and somebody who gets it. And I've been around long enough where people, they either recognize me from Twitter or Tumblr or my videos, and they know that I'm legit. They know that I'm not just some, you know, person who's going in. And I try, you know, even though the term is pro mommy, I like to say, even though people will roll their eyes when I say this, fantasy facilitator, because again, people have different things. A lot of times, and I try to differentiate myself, is a lot of times the people I get for a session, they're new and, you know, it's the first time exploring their kink. So I kind of help them explore the kink and I kind of ease into it, because everybody has this fantasy that they're going to go to a session and they're going to have all the diapers and all the changes, all the humiliation. But no, it's not like when you're like that, you're scared. There's thoughts running through your head. There's shame. There's doubt. There's, you know, the unknown. So I try to really help people walk through the emotions of that and process it while having a good time and having realistic expectations.
And I really like that you do that. And I've been a client a couple of times of a professional, and that's included some people who are pro doms who dabble in ABDL. Very different kind of session from an ABDL perspective that you get with them. So yeah, they might have some experience with it in the sense that, you know, I'm not the first person that's ever come to them for that, but it's clearly not where they spend 99% of their time. And it's a very stark difference when you go to someone who is a, let's call it professional caregiver, because it's, you know, a lot of different kinds of roles, who really does kind of focus on that, because they just get what you need. It's so mental, you know, a lot of, and BDSM is such a huge world, right?
Yes.
But it is so mental for a lot of folks, ABDL and BDSM, but in very different ways, you know.
And there's people who I realize who I talk to, they don't know what aftercare is. They don't know what sub drop is. It's something my first experience, the person didn't explain to me what drop was. They didn't explain to me what sub frenzy was, or aftercare, you know, until, you know, I didn't find that out until a couple months into it after I had my first experiences. And so I make sure, you know, I fill people and I explain that to them, and we come up with a plan, an aftercare plan, whether it's virtual session or, you know, in person. Okay, you know, this is what aftercare is. What are we going to do to, you know, let's come up with stuff you can do to help yourself tomorrow if you're feeling drop. And, you know, and I realized too, again, this is a privilege when somebody, you know, picks you to be their fantasy facilitator for a session. It's not cheap. I know it's not. It's expensive. And they're, you know, people save up. This is something they save up to spend. And I take it seriously that I want to give them the best experience that, you know, because this is something, a lot of them, it's the once in a lifetime thing.
For sure. So let's just go straight to the topic then. If someone's coming to you for a session, first time, 10th time, what is your advice to them on how to make it a good session?
Well, you know, the first thing I always say is, you know, start your communication polite, you know, you know, say hello, you know, Miss James. A lot of people say hello, Miss Lizzie. You know, well written email, not something like, hey, where can I find you or can you spag me? You know, answer the emails when they, you know, pay the deposits. Like I, like many providers, I require a deposit for in-person sessions beforehand, making sure you do that, making sure you pay, you know, when the payment's due and not trying to haggle. When you come to the session, being honest, exactly, you know, what you want to do, be agreed to be open with the communication and being just for, don't try to hold anything in. One thing that I do that it's different than other providers is that I require virtual sessions first before anybody sees me in person, because I feel like it helps with being comfortable with each other. If you have that, at least the one Skype interaction or the one, you know, texting interaction, like a texting session, because sometimes you realize you won't jive or you realize, you know, from my part, I might get a bad feeling like this won't work, or they might be like, you know, this isn't my style. I don't want to do this. So it allows people to try it in a more contained atmosphere. And then also too, when we do go forward with a in-person session, it helps because it always feels like you already played once with this person. You already talked once with this person. It's not so, you know, stark, or it's not such a shock at first.
I think that's a terrific way of going about it, because I do think there's an intimacy that comes in ABDL that is just really important to the entire experience. And again, I don't mean to contrast it with other aspects of BDSM, which are all equally valid, of course, but a lot of BDSM, there can be a layer of impersonality to it. That is fine for folks. Like they don't necessarily need that intimate connection because this dominatrix they want to play with, like they're okay with that person just being mean and distant because that's what they want. But when it comes to ABDL, some people want that. Some people want sort of that dismissiveness of, oh, look at that diaper boy. He wants to be with a diaper boy, and sort of that little bit of a harsher teasing. But in my experience, what ABDLs are looking for is a balance in a lot of cases. They want some gentle teasing, but also a lot of intimacy. They want that teasing to come from a place of what seems like love.
And caring, yes. It's a caring, concern, nurturing, teasing. And that's the point. Even though some people, again, think it's overkill, I request anybody who wants a session, virtual or in person, they fill out an inquiry form on my website, and then I get back to them. And then once we decide to do, you know, once they pay, you know, either for the virtual session or for the deposit for the in-person, I have another form that actually provides detail. Like, what do you want out of the session? What do you want to wear? What, you know, so I know, so there's not any guessing. There's not guessing. Like, I don't want somebody to be like, wow, they didn't give me, you know, they didn't tease me or they made me feel bad. You know, being able to lay that all on the table. And again, I'm very transparent to people saying that, again, I'm new to in-person sessions, and I've had people who are into different fetishes who have sought me out, like for tickling. I did my first tickling session last week, and I was very up forward. I was like, I've never done tickling a day in my life. And, you know, the person was just, he liked the personality and the genuineness on my Twitter. And that's what made him reach out. And, you know, he enjoyed being able to teach me different things about the tickling world. And I enjoyed learning from him, enjoying that as well. So again, being honest and upfront, I work very hard to be genuine and upfront with my clients, and I expect the same.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to ask people those questions up front. I know it can seem a little bit like you're going to the doctor for the first time, and there's like a 5-page form to fill out. But I just want to remind folks, like, it is expensive. It's not something you get to do very often. You want to have a great experience, and the way to do that is with communication. And from talking to other professionals and other ABDLs, I found that a lot of times people will go into a session and they don't want to decide anything, because that kind of flies in the face of, well, I'm just a little, I don't get to decide things. That's what the big is for. And that's great in a lifestyle relationship where you're with that person every day. But if you get, you know, this one session, and that's sort of your shot at your fantasy, you don't get to do that. You have to know what you want to have a good session, because otherwise you'll spend quite a bit of money, and an hour or two later, you're kind of coming out of it saying, well, that wasn't really what I had in mind.
Exactly. And that's, you know, and I never want anybody to feel like that, because I know, like, I know that feeling when you spend something, you look forward to something, and a lot of it, you put all your eggs in one basket and you have these fantasies. It's like when you go to Disney World and you're so excited to go to Disney World as an adult, and then you realize, oh, it's not as great as you thought it was. Even though I love Disney World, it's still as great as I thought it was. You want to be able to have that, and being realistic. That's why I have, you know, I'm very upfront too about the stoplight system, about red, yellow, green, Dorian, and I explain what each one means. And Dorian, you know, even in Headspace, you know, I'll ask, like, are you, is this okay, sweetheart? Like, are you feeling okay? And again, I think it's important for any of the, you know, people who are having sessions, or even somebody who's topping, is being, and even, you know, even if you're a little or a sub, being able to read the other person, being able to read the body cues, being able to read their faces, being able to get a pulse on that. And also too, like, for an example, there was one client, you know, I always ask for allergies and, or people, if they have any like trouble spots I should worry about, like if they have a sore shoulder or something like that. Cause I know there's one person who said they were allergic to milk. I might have not known, I made them drink a whole bottle of chocolate milk, and then they would have had a freaking, you know, allergic reaction. That's why it's important. Like, I know, let's say if somebody has a hard, you know, they can't lay flat for very long, I know when I position them, I lay them up against me, I'll put them against with pillows and that kind of stuff. I'm able to adjust to make them more comfortable. Because again, if I don't know you have a bad back and I have you laying flat on the ground, or let's say I put you in bondage, you might get really hurt, and I don't want that to happen.
Yeah, that's also a big part of it, is there is this safety aspect to all of this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you make a great point about how the top needs to be paying attention to body language and checking in verbally. I think a lot of times there is sort of this notion that some people who just don't have a ton of experience have, that it's on the bottom to red, yellow, green. It's on them to say, you know, where the line is, but it's important that the top is checking in, because, you know, you could be doing something that's pretty physical, and by the time they say red, you've already done it.
Exactly. And you know, and I also too, you might feel something, your gut might be saying, okay, this person might want to, you know, breastfeed or something, or suckle on my breast. And, you know, asking them, sometimes, no, they're just looking like, they just like looking at your breast, or they're content, you know. And other times, you know, my gut's right and they do, we didn't talk about it, but I could tell they're interested in it. So I kind of ask them, like, you know, is this something, you know, you want to try? Do you want to do this, sweetheart? And, you know, giving that opportunity. And again, there's something, if I can see it, even if somebody doesn't say for it, but I can tell, like, their body language, or they're too tense, or that, I won't do it. You know what I mean? I will go on to a different activity, because it's a responsibility. And I know that because I've had personal play where the tops, I've been very lucky with the tops I've played with that have been able to gauge, you know, my body reaction. And they actually held me back from certain things because they knew I wasn't ready for it, or that I wasn't in the right frame of mind. And I'm so appreciative of that. And that kind of helped me learn more about my body and more about what I can withstand.
And I've been in that position as the bottom as well, with one play partner who, exactly what you just talked about, you know, we were playing and I was lying against her, and she says, do you want to try suckling on my nipples? And it's like, yeah. But, you know, she was reading that body language, because I didn't actually ask for it. It wasn't something we talked about prior to our play session. It was just in the moment where I'm nuzzling against her, and she, you know, says, do you want to try this? And that's how I learned it's possible for people to orgasm by having their nipples played with.
Yeah, no, that's always a fun fact to learn. And another important thing,
I was very proud of myself.
No, that is, that's, it's a good party trick. Another good thing is too, is even as a bottom too, I mean, this is more, with, you know, personal play too, you have to be able to read your top as well. Even if you're in subspace and that kind of stuff, my personal play, if I can tell my top, you know, top I'm playing with is struggling for something, or I can tell just maybe is not very in top space, or is not being able to get there, I'd be like, you know, because we have roles and that kind of stuff, but you want to remember, a person's a person first, you know, that kind of stuff. And let's say, you know, we've all been in positions where you're looking forward to a spanking or that, and you realize your play partner at the time, maybe they're going through stuff, their head's not in it, but they want to do what, you know, they kept the promise to you. Always try to be respectful and realize, you know, like, hey, I see you're not really feeling toppy tonight, or I feel like you just look tired. Why don't you want to do something else instead? Or, you know, I don't want you to push yourself. Showing that consideration, you know, in that play to your tops is, you know, something that I feel most people forget about, but it's so important.
Very much so. Because I also switch in when I play in my personal life, and they are very different headspaces, yeah. And it just sometimes it just really feels like, wow, this is kind of like work. Yeah. And that can be, you know, it just leads to like no one having fun. And exactly. I think if you sort of just have those conversations about, you know, hey, are you really into this tonight? If you're not into this tonight, that's okay. It's better to pause and say, you know what, let's just watch a movie, than it is to sort of muddle your way through it. And then to later on be thinking like, geez, do I really even want to see that person again? Is that worth it? Yeah, and like, in that sense, it's yeah. really kind of a lot like this vanilla relationships, right? I mean, not everybody's into everything all the time. And that sort of byplay of just around consent, and do you want to do this, and does this feel good, and how are you feeling tonight, all of that applies just more so, well, I wouldn't say that, not necessarily more so, but just in a perhaps more intense way, just because the physicality of it can lead to someone getting injured. Mm-hmm. And not just that, but you know, it's not just for me, it's not just about, are you okay with me touching you here, hitting you there. It's, can I call you this? Can I use these words? Because yeah. you can definitely trigger someone's like deep-seated, like, you called me that. And that's something that my dad used to call me all the time when he was mad at me. And it just freaks me out. And you can really, like, you can do some psychological damage if you're not careful.
And that's why it's so important, even to like, and again, as you know, switching from a top perspective, there might be something, if there's words that are, you know, uncomfortable for you to say, let's say if you really have a problem with calling somebody, you know, I don't know, a douche or something. So I wouldn't say something more vulgar, but I won't say it on air. And you know, it's triggering for you to say to somebody, it's your responsibility to say, hey, look, I know you want to be called, you know, you like degrading, but there are some words I just don't feel comfortable saying. So we can use any words except these two or three. Because it's important to you, because again, as a top, you can be triggered as well.
Absolutely. Even in virtual play, you know, when I was kind of very new at this, I mean, like very, very new at this, I was in college, and to date myself, I have a birthday coming up next month. It's terrible.
Happy birthday.
No, it's terrible. Who wants to get a year older?
That's a good one. Now, you age yourself that way, because I do the same thing. So you're, you know, I'm with you on that one.
Anyway, so when I was like really in just in college, and MySpace was actually a pretty good place to meet ABDLs.
I missed that whole boat, because MySpace was huge when I was in high school, and even like the first 2 years of like college for me. And people, you know, especially the spankers, they were like, oh, I met people, and I didn't know what kink was at the time then. So I'm like, damn, I really missed that boat.
Yeah. And it was kind of weird, because it's totally going off track, but I wasn't on social media when I started college. It was still like really, really new. I don't remember what year Facebook started, but MySpace was still a very active thing, and it had a decent ABDL community there. There were groups that you could easily find and chat with people, and then occasionally your page would get shut down. So that part hasn't really changed. But it was still anonymous, was the thing. You know, it was still anonymous back then. So it wasn't like we were to get on Facebook and you have to kind of go out of your way to make an anonymous profile these days. And I met partners on there, and we would then move from MySpace over to AOL Instant Messaging.
Oh, AIM, the good old
AIM, right? To do just role play through IMing. I don't even know if people today say IM.
Oh God, I know IMing. I still, for the longest time, I called Facebook messaging IM. Like, oh, well, IM you. We are kindred souls. I feel on that one. I feel, God, you're bringing me back now.
Yeah. And when I say that these days, like the younger people in my office, but like, you're going to do what? You're going to like Zoom me? What?
Oh God. Yeah. I don't even know what a floppy disk is.
But anyway, I remember someone saying, I want you to do this to me by IM. And I was like, I'm not even comfortable typing this.
Like, yeah.
So, you know, fast forward to when I'm doing like in-person play, there are definitely things as a top, like it's not just things that you don't want to do to someone or things that you don't want to experience. It's yes, that mental space of there are some things that just cross your own lines that aren't even, they don't even qualify as kinks. It's not like saying I'm just not into this kink. It's this way of speaking or this way of treating someone. It just crosses that line of I can't do it without feeling bad about myself, in the same way that a bottom partner might feel like I can't do this without feeling frightened or feeling shame.
I just don't think
the top gets enough appreciation in that regard of it's not just about the bottom's limits.
And I think that's something that's not really talked about too. I agree with you 100%. I feel like, you know, people, and again, there's so many, I was going through Reddit last night, and these forums like, well, you know, mommy's supposed to do everything, daddy's supposed to do everything. Like, no, like there, again, like I understand there's dynamics in that, but it's a person first. You need to see the person before you see the kink or the, what they identify as like in that kind of role. You need to see the person and their human needs and what they feel comfortable with.
Yeah. And I think a lot of folks, it's because they're a little bit caught up in the fantasy as they're not the fantasy they want to have with you, but the fantasy they want to have in their real life.
Oh yeah.
That you just need to kind of pause with them and remind them, you know, like this isn't like the first day of the rest of our lives together. This is a session. We don't know each other well enough for me to know what you want, or for you just to say, well, I want mommy to decide. Like you don't know me. Like, how do you know you want me to decide? Exactly. You want a mommy to decide. I mean, that's what you want in your life every single day, but this isn't that.
And that's super important to have that clarity before even somebody pays, before, you know, to realize mm-hmm. that and we're on the same page. And I know when somebody, if you can tell, they're just like, maybe it's sub friends or maybe they just are too wrapped up in it. And I know they're going to be too kind. They won't be able to get through that. Like, they won't be able to see it as, you know, communication. I won't take the session. I don't care how much they offer. If I know that they won't be able to communicate, it's not worth either of us.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And the same goes just from my own perspective. I have people approach me sometimes about writing things for them. Mm-hmm. I have yet to actually take a custom from anyone because they're frequently coming to me for things that are just something that I don't, no, it's not one of my things. And not that I'm not open to trying new things, but I want them to have a good experience. And if they're having to explain to me what this fetish they're asking me to write about is sort of all about, how could I write that well? How could I give them something that they're going to enjoy if I really don't even understand what makes that thing, you know, paddle their boat for them.
Exactly. And that's responsibility, because, you know, especially if they're so into every minute detail, for you as a content creator, you know, you'll never live up to their expectations. So why are you setting it up? You know, and it's something when somebody with a custom, they're so minute with the videos and that kind of stuff. I'm like, look, even if I do the best I can, it's never going to live up to your fantasy. And I don't want you to have to deal with that.
So when you're writing your own content, so separate from customs, I'm kind of curious, where do your ideas come from? When do you decide like, oh, I'm just going to film this?
Well, it comes like, you know, I get a lot of ideas from just, you know, scrolling through Twitter, you know, Reddit, from my own mind and that kind of stuff. And I actually, like, I jot down, I have like a notes app in my phone that I write down different things, even talking through friends, you know, like I'm like, oh, this is a good idea. That's, you know, it just anything. It's almost like with vanilla stuff. When I, you know, write vanilla stories, or when I would do vanilla stuff for my own job, I'd be like, oh, this is an idea. You know, you get inspiration from everywhere, from taking a walk, watching TV, you know, it comes to you. And sometimes you have to write it down, at least for me, because I have the worst short-term memory. And then I realized, you know, I usually try to set up at least a day or two a week to film. I usually do one day devoted to customs and then the other day devoted to, you know, what I want to do. And I figure out, okay, and I set it up. And, you know, sometimes I do something like, this isn't going to work. But then other times I'm midway through an idea and I'm like, oh, let's switch it this way. And the things that I don't think will end up selling well actually end up to be the best sellers.
Yeah, it is kind of surprising sometimes. I've seen the same things where as a written content creator, I'm sometimes just surprised by what's popular. Because I have more ideas than is really even healthy at this point. And Twitter doesn't help because it just kind of keeps you in that space of, oh, there's ABDL content out there right now that I'm not looking at.
I get that totally.
But yeah, there can just be that surprise of what it is that people like. You know, my first story that I sort of, you know, I'll call it like the modern era of my sharing my writing, because I shared some writing years ago that some folks, you know, liked a little bit, but it wasn't really widely distributed, and I'm not particularly proud of it now. Mm-hmm. But when I started writing sort of more seriously a couple of years ago, it was not sexualized ABDL content. It was very much ABDL as genre fiction, but it wasn't sexualized at all. And people really, really, really liked it. And when I switched, I finished that story, and I switched to something else that was more sexual, that did bring in spanking and aspects of erotic humiliation, there's definitely an audience for it, quite a large audience for it, actually. But it was not popular with a lot of the folks who liked my earlier writing, because that wasn't what they wanted. And there I was thinking like, oh, I'm going to do something that really is more kinky than just ABDL. Mm-hmm. And the reaction from a lot of folks was, what happened to those nice characters that you had, you know? So it just does show like there is an audience for everything and not as much crossover as you might expect sometimes.
And you're never going to make everybody happy. There are some people who just like my big stuff. There's some people who just like my little stuff, but it comes, you know, as a point is it's your content, you know, and you need to figure out some things you just do. There's some customs where I'm not into it at all, but I do it for the price, you know, I do it for the money, but there's things where I make content. Well, even if I don't think it's going to sell amazingly well, I know that there's going to be people who are going to appreciate it. I'm going to have fun filming it. And again, too, and I think that when people realize they can know your enthusiasm and like your effort you put into the content. And I think that makes a huge difference, too, because if they see that, there's sometimes where I go to film and it's just not coming across right, and I will scrap it for the day and I will try again tomorrow, because I rather wait the day and make good content. And if I'm just not feeling it or just not into that space, I'm not going to make shitty content.
Same. You know, when I first started writing, I was in like the headspace for it. I had an idea. I decided to start putting it down on paper, and I was publishing like a chapter a day. Mm-hmm. And each chapter was, you know, 2,500, 3,000 words long, sometimes longer. For reference, like 500 words to a page. So turning out like 5-6 pages a day is, you know, tremendous. And I wrote like a 300,000 word book that way.
Wow.
And 2.5 years later, I'm producing more like 2-3 chapters a week, because it's not the same flow. And sometimes it just gets more difficult. It's not exactly writer's block. Sometimes it's more just sort of a dearth of ideas of what to do next, or the story just isn't quite clicking the way that you know, it was at other points, or you're busy in your life.
And that happens. I mean, I know people who, you know, have followed me for a year. I was having really like a hard time taking photos, churning out content. I mean, I know the pandemic affected everybody, but I was in such a rut. I didn't feel comfortable with my body. I didn't feel comfortable in my headspace. And it really wasn't until probably February, March that I got back in the swing of things. Like before, like I was cranking out content, like 10, 15 videos a month. And then I went months without even uploading a video because I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I was just not in a place to do it. So again, I really think that it ebbs and flows. And I think when you first get into it, you get that excitement. So you just push everything out and then you realize it kind of levels out and you feel a little bit, you know, and instead of pushing it, you focus on quality instead of quantity.
Exactly. Because especially in, at least in writing or really any type of content creation that is serialized. So, you know, like a novel, each chapter is a part of the story. You can't undo it.
Yeah.
If you turn out a chapter that you don't like and you release it, You can't undo it. You can't make people unread the thing that, you know, took your plot in a direction you didn't mean to take it just because you weren't thinking and you just wanted to post something. So I know as a writer in particular, when I post stuff to free sites, a lot of times people will just, they'll comment more, please. And it's kind of irritating because it's been like, you didn't pay me for it.
Exactly. No, I agree
with
that.
But on the other hand, it's also irritating. It's like, you don't want just more, like you want something that's good. If I just give you more, it could potentially stop being good. So I need to do it on my pace.
Exactly.
Yeah. So going back to some of the advice aspects of this, now, what's your advice for someone who wants to start doing videos or offering in-person sessions?
I would tell them, think very, 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 very hard about this. This is not something you do for the money. This is not something that will happen overnight. You need to be completely comfortable with the fact, you know, be okay with the fact that you might get out of it. Somebody who you might not want to know about this, will find out that there is a chance that you will be recognized, that this will come back to haunt you, or, you know, get brought up somewhere. You need to be okay with the fact and that it will not completely put a bomb into your life, that it won't affect your family, your friends, you know, if you have different responsibilities. You need to be very, very certain. Do not just do this as a one-off thing. It's not a, again, even though I say it was baptism by fire for me, it is not a decision to be taken lightly. And it's something that will take time to build up. You will not just roll in here and just instantly be insta-famous. I mean, I know there's, especially on the Instagram scene with ABDLs and Tumblr, like, you know, they have all these cute things and they have, you know, company promoters and all. It's not all about that. Like, you really want to do this, you have to be able to, you need to be committed to the marketing side of it and the business side of it if you really want to have something that has sustainability.
For sure. And that is, I think also, you mentioned just briefly, an important part of it is the work that goes into making people aware that your content even exists.
Oh yeah.
That's not really the fun part of this.
It's not. I mean, there's things, I mean, it's constantly replying to people, finding different things, finding new avenues. I mean, it took a lot of people I've collaborated with, different productions, different things. You know, it takes a while to get known, especially now that anybody with a camera and a diaper can post content. I mean, this might not be the best content, but you need to find a differentiation to make you stand out from the rest of the diaper people.
Branding 101.
My degree is in marketing. So yep. I mean, that, if you haven't told, that actually has been very, very beneficial to building my kink stuff. But it definitely is, like, it's marketing 101.
Yeah. And it's just, there is like a work aspect to this for sure. You know, it's not just I'm filling my everyday life and putting it out there, or I'm writing about whatever fancy pops into my head. Especially nowadays, because there are so many different platforms. Managing different platforms is a pain in the ass.
Oh, it's super pain in the ass. It takes about 2 hours a day to go through everything. I mean, uploading it, figuring out the different files, you know, posting stuff. It is, like, there is admin work, especially now that I'm doing this full time. There is a whole different set of, you know, admin stuff that goes along with it. And there's sometimes where I do this and all of a sudden I don't want to get my rocks off to stuff I like. I'm like, I'm too tired to jerk off right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the platforms are all different in terms of the type of content they allow and the actual, like, interface of it and how to use it.
Exactly. And the descriptions too, what you can use for the descriptions, what words you can use. Mm-hmm. Then you have to think about making your trailer, making your teasers, that kind of stuff, how that's going to do, what keyword, what tag you want to do, if it's competing against different videos. All of that goes into it.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's really time consuming. And then you do all that and you still have to make people aware that you exist.
Exactly.
Which especially is difficult because the social platforms don't allow you to advertise adult content.
Exactly. I mean, there's ways around. I mean, you've seen people who promote, you know, for Twitter. I mean, Twitter has been the best way for me to promote my content. Mm-hmm. That has been my bread and butter, Twitter. has been how I made the most connections. Again, like there's stuff on Instagram that, I mean, I have gotten stuff taken down. Tumblr, I've had stuff getting taken down, but it's definitely figuring out loopholes around that and safe ways to do that. Sometimes it's not just promotion. You have to put that content out there that's not asking people, because if you ask people for stuff all the time, they're not going to like you. You need to provide stuff and, you know, and have them a reason to be interested into the premium content. You need to give them a reason to be enticed.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure. And then, of course, we're just always facing the issue of being deplatformed, not just from social media, but even from the adult content sites. There is this, across the media space in general, there is a non-vanilla bias where, you know, you actually can advertise erotica on Twitter and Amazon, for instance. It just has to be bad erotica.
Exactly. It has to be vanilla.
You know, it has to be not just vanilla, but it has to be like the, you can like this picture the book cover of some, you know, ripped guy with hair halfway down to his waist, like wielding a sword. That kind of erotica is okay to advertise on Amazon. You know, the kind of stuff that's like Fabio lookalikes, and stories that it's almost like a Lifetime movie, but with sex.
Exactly.
You can advertise that on Amazon, but anything that really is even slightly more explicit in a vanilla way, and even less explicit, for instance, in a non-vanilla way, they don't let you advertise. Like I said, my first book was not sexual at all. And I tried to take out an Amazon ad for it, and they said no. And then you also deal with, as I was saying, the adult content platforms have an anti-age play bias. You know, there's already, you know, SCAT is obviously a whole different thing, but it's also clearly related. A lot of them don't allow that because their credit card companies, for whatever reason, have decided that's where they're going to plant their flag, is to say, we're not going to allow people to pay for that kind of content using our payment systems, which to me is just kind of ridiculous. That bothers you so much. Of all the things out there that you could say people can't use your card to buy, you're deciding like pictures of people pooping their pants is too much. But, you know, we've seen just in the past year, a number of really well-known ABL content creators got deplatformed from some of the major platforms. And some of them were allowed back on, but it was, you know, you can put up diaper fetish content. You cannot do age play content.
And there's a thing too, there's a way where, again, like you have to be prepared to be adaptable. You know what I mean? There's some stuff where you realize I can do certain stuff on Clips for Sale that I can't do for 8B Clips. Or there is something where I know my descriptions not to use certain words, but they might be in my video, but not to use them in the description. So it's, if somebody, like, if you're not patient, you're not willing to do the rewrites and the re-edits and that kind of stuff, then you're not going to, you're really have the chance of not being a platform, because again, it's tedious, but you can, it takes a much longer than it used to, but you know, you can still be successful, but it takes so much more customizing.
Exactly. You know, I just had to shift some of my content over to Subscribestar. Mm-hmm. Which is, it's the, you know, it's the platform that allows pretty much anything. And it's not just for adult content. So it just kind of creates other layers to it. If you really want to associate yourself with a website that also hosts a lot of like alt-right content, because it allows almost anything. But there's just limited spaces out there for ABDLs to exist in. And you know, you don't have a relationship with them. You're just using their platform, right? Mm-hmm. But even still, you know, that just is something that you just have to account for. I can now use this kind of content on this site, and this other stuff has to go on Subscribestar because it is too explicit, or not even necessarily explicit, but it's too ABDL.
Exactly.
The content I had that was just included characters who were very, very regressed mentally, that was too close to the line for the other platform that I mostly use. I was like, okay, that's, you know, okay, that's your platform. I understand that. But it's like, where else do you go? And I was considering, I'm still considering, like, do I need this to build my own website to host stuff? But that comes with a whole lot of work. and expense. You can make a free website, but you can't make a free website where people can subscribe and where it looks good and it functions well, and you have, you know, all the bells and whistles. That's not free.
And that costs thousands of dollars in upkeep and processor. So you're getting into a whole nother animal there.
Exactly. Especially if you're storing video or audio content, suddenly you're like just paying for a lot of storage space. So it's really difficult. I guess this is all a shorthand saying it's really difficult being an ABDL content creator. And that's why everyone listening should continue to support your ABDL content creators.
I completely agree. And I thank you for this. That's why I was really glad to come on this, you know, and talk more about it because I believe knowledge is power. So I hope anybody's listening to this, they get a better, you know, idea kind of what goes on behind the scenes. And, you know, and again, if you feel, I know it's nerve wracking reaching out for a session or a virtual session or a custom, never be afraid. As long as you're polite and you're, you know, and your email is well written, you'll get, at least from me, you'll get a nice response.
I think that is also just a great reminder for folks is how you communicate with someone really, really matters. And the number one thing I think in a lot of this space is pay attention to how someone wants to be addressed. If they don't explicitly say somewhere on their channels, it's okay to call me mommy. Don't call them mommy.
Exactly. If you call me mommy first off the bat in your first email, you will get blocked.
Yeah. That's a red line for people because it goes back to that notion of, yeah, tops have limits too. And mommy implies a certain amount of ownership. You're my mommy. Mm-hmm. And a certain intimacy of a relationship that doesn't exist yet. It just crosses a line for folks. It's kind of like if you were to, you know, approach someone in a vanilla space and, you know, like on a dating app, and the first thing you said was, hey, future wife. You know, it's jarring. So always pay attention to that, how people want to be addressed. And if someone doesn't have, you know, miss or mistress or whatever attached to their moniker, just call them their name.
Or just Just say hello in a comma.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that's all great advice. And then I'm just kind of curious, as you think about all the ABDL content creators out there, who are some of your favorites?
I would have to say Adriana Evans, who I work with quite frequently. She's one of my favorites. She's probably, you know, one of the people I first watched before we even knew each other. Penny Barber, of course, the godmother of ABDL. She's amazing. I also really like Alex Reynolds. She does a lot of ABDL spanking and diaper discipline, which is really good. So I guess they would be my three top favorites, I would say. But again, like, I'm always finding new people and I always love to see what content creators are coming up with. And it helps really also, you know, spur my creativity as well.
Mm-hmm. And what's up next for you?
You know, this summer I have a bunch of different shoots planned. I have, you know, I'm expanding different things, role play sessions. I'm still working on sprucing up my nursery with more vintage, you know, decorations and all. And I'm just really hoping to get more people in to have experience and to really connect with more people. You know, I never thought I'd be doing, you know, this full time right now. For the moment I am, and I'm just excited to see where life takes me. So, you know, always, I encourage everybody to follow my Twitter. That's where I update the most. And if you are interested in a virtual session or an in-person session or a custom, just shoot me an email and I'm excited to work with you.
That's great. Will we see you at any cons this year or next?
I will be at CapCon most likely. And I do go to all the national spanking parties. I will not be at TeddyCon, but I will be offering, I'm not far from actually TeddyCon, but I will be offering a people in the area. I highly recommend if you want to have a session, that would be a great time to, you know, either before or after the con is to schedule something with me because I'm probably only like a half hour, 45 minute drive from there.
Terrific. So thank you so much again for your time today. I had a great time talking to you. You can find Lizzie's work at MissLizzieJames.com and you can find my stories on Patreon, Amazon, Subscribestar. You can check out allmylinks.com/AlexBridges to find all those links. And thank you again, and I hope you have a great rest of your Saturday.
Thank you.